This time there was a pause in the reply, and Herr Geschert made wah-wah sounds again, to which the Kratzer, who had been staring at Dietrich throughout, made the dismissive toss gesture. It clicked its lips together, and the sprite said, "There is no small man. The box himself speaks." Dietrich laughed. "How can that be," he asked, "when you have no tongue?" "What means tongue?" Amused, Dietrich stuck his tongue out. The Kratzer reached its long arm out and touched the picture frame, and the picture changed to a portrait of Dietrich himself, fully rendered, in depth, in the act of sticking his tongue out. In some manner, the tongue in the portrait glowed. Dietrich wondered if he had been wrong about the demonic nature of these beings. "Is this tongue?" the Heinzelmunken asked. "Yes, that is doch the tongue. Many thanks." It was when it thanked me, Dietrich told Manfred later that evening, that I began to suspect that it was a machine. "A machine?" Manfred thought about that. "You mean like Muller's camshaft?" The two of them stood by a credence table near the fireplace in the great hall. The remnants of the dinner had been cleared, the children sent to bed with their nurse, the juggler thanked and dismissed with his finning, the other guests escorted to the door by Gunther. The hall was now sealed, and even the servants sent away, leaving only Max to guard the door. Manfred filled two Mangoleins with wine by his own hand. He proffered both, and Dietrich chose the one on the left. "Thank you, mein Herr." Manfred grinned briefly. "Should I suspect now that you, too, are all gears and cams?" "Please." I was conscious of the irony. They walked together from the credence table to stand near the fire. The ruddy embers hissed and licked occasionally into flame. Dietrich rubbed his hand across the roughly textured glass of his wine bowl while he considered. There was no cadence to the voice, he decided. Or rather, its cadence was mechanical, without rhetorical flourishes. It lacked scorn, amusement, emphasis, hesitation. It said many thanks with all the feeling of a shuttlecock flying across a loom.
"I see," said Manfred.
And Dietrich raised a finger post. "And that was another convincing point. You and I understand that by see, you signified something other than a direct impression on the sense of sight. As Buridan said, there is more to the meaning of an utterance than the precise words uttered. But the Heinzelmannken did not understand figures. Once it learned that the tongue is a part of the body, it became confused when I referred to the German tongue. It did not comprehend metonymy."
"That's Greek to me," Manfred said.
"What I mean, my lord, is that I think they may not know poetry."
"No poetry."
Manfred frowned, swirled his wine cup, and threw down a swallow.
"Imagine that," he said.
For a moment Dietrich thought the Hare had spoken sarcastically, but the man surprised him when he continued, almost to himself,
"No King Rother, no Einheit."
He lifted his cup and declaimed,
"Roland raises Oliphant to his lips, draws deep breath, and blows with all his force. High are the mountains, and from peak to peak the sound re-echoes 30 leagues away." "Ah, by God, I cannot hear those lines sung without a shiver."
He turned to Dietrich.
"You will swear that this Heinzelmunken is only a device and not a real brownie?"
"Mein Herr, Bacon described such a talking head,
though he knew not how one might be fashioned.
Since 13 years the Milanese built a mechanical clock in their public square that rings the hours with no man's hand intervening. If a mechanical device can speak the time, why cannot a more subtle device speak of other matters?"
"That logic of yours will get you into trouble one of these days," Manfred cautioned him. "But you say it already knew some phrases and words. How was that come by?"
"They placed devices about the village to listen to our speech. They showed me one. It was no bigger than my thumb and looked like an insect, for which reason I call them bugs. From what he overheard, the Heinzelmunken deduced somehow a meaning, that how goes it signified a greeting, or that swine signified that particular animal, and so forth. But he was limited by what the mechanical bugs saw and heard, much of which he did not properly understand. So while he knew that swine were sometimes called sucklings or yearlings, he did not grasp the distinction, let alone that between the first, second, and third pen, or between breeding and leader sows, by which I deduce that these folk are not swineherds, Manfred grunted.
You still call it a Heinzelmunken, then?
Dietrich shrugged. The name is as good as any. But I coined a term in Greek to signify both the brownie and the bugs.
Yes, you would have.
I call them automata, because they are self-acting.
Like the mill wheel, then?
Very like, save that I know not what fluid impresses an impetus on them.
Manfred's eyes searched the hall. Might a bug listen even now?
Dietrich shrugged. They placed them on Lauren's Eve just before your return. They're subtle, but I doubt they could have slipped into the Hof or the Berg. The sentries may not be the most alert, but they might have marked a skulking five-shoe-tall grasshopper.
Manfred guffawed and slapped Dietrich on the shoulder. A five-shoe grasshopper! Yes, they would have noticed that.
In the parsonage, Dietrich examined his rooms carefully, and finally found a bug no larger than his least finger digit, nestled in the arms of Lawrence's cross, a clever perch. The automaton could observe the entire room, and dark-colored as it was, remain unseen. Dietrich left it in place. If the stranger's intent was to learn the German tongue, then the sooner that was accomplished, the sooner Dietrich could explain the need for them to depart. I will fetch a fresh hour candle, he announced to the listening instrument, then having obtained one from the casket, concluded, I have fetched an hour candle. He held the candle so that it faced the bug. This is called an hour candle. It is composed of, he pinched a piece off the edge, of beeswax. Each numbered line marks 1/12th part of the day from sunrise to sunset. I gauge the time by how far down the candle has burned. He spoke self-consciously at first, then more in the manner of an arts master giving a cursory. Yet what listened was not a class of scholars, but one of Bacon's talking heads, and he wondered to what extent he was understood by the device, or even whether, in this instance, understanding had any meaning. 6. September 1348. The Stigmata of St. Francis. They called themselves the Crank, or something to which the human tongue could come no closer. But whether the term was as encompassing as human, or as peculiar as Black Forester, Dietrich could not immediately discern.
I certainly look sick,
said Max after one visit, and he laughed at the pun, for Crank sounded much like the German word for sick, and indeed, given their spindly form and gray complexion, the name struck Dietrich as an uncomfortable bit of divine whimsy. Theresia had wanted to go to them with her herbs. It is what the Blessed Lord would have done, she said, which shamed Dietrich, for he himself was more concerned to see them gone than succored. And although he admitted succor as an efficient means to that end, one must assent to the good for its own sake, and not merely as the means to another good. Yet he was reluctant to admit Theresia to the circle of those who knew of the Krenken. Beings of such strange appearance and powers would attract interest, shattering Dietrich's seclusion forever. And 4 was already a high number for keeping secrets. He contented Theresia by pleading the hare's instructions, but she pressed her potions upon him. The Krenken seemed to grow well or not on their use, much as did humans. As summer waned, Dietrich visited the encampment every few days. Sometimes he went alone, sometimes with Max or Hilda. Hilda would change bandages and clean slowly healing wounds, and Dietrich would teach the Kratzer and Geschert enough German through the good offices of the talking heads so they would understand that they must leave. Their response had thus far been a guarded refusal, but whether from willfulness or incomprehension was unclear. Max would sometimes sit with him in these sessions. Drill being to him natural, he was helpful with the repetition and dumb play needed to communicate the meaning of many words.
More often, the sergeant watched over Hilda like her guardian angel, and would, when her unwanted ministry was concluded, escort her back to Oberhochwald. The Heinzelmannchen acquired German quickly, for the talking head, once he learned a usage, never forgot. He owned a prodigious memory, though the lacunae in his understanding were curious. Day he had intuited by listening to village talk, but year puzzled him entirely until it was explained. Yet how could any breed of man, however distant their homeland, fail to recognize the circuit of the sun? So too the word love, which the device confused with the Greek eros, through some unfortunate clandestine observations into which Dietrich thought it best not to inquire. "He is an intuitive collection of cogs and cams," Dietrich told the sergeant after one session. "Any words which are signs in themselves, such as refer to beings or to actions by beings, he apprehends immediately, while those that are signs for species or relations, he finds a stumble-step. Hence cottage and castle were clear, but habitation required instruction." Max only grinned. "Perhaps he is not so well-schooled as you,"